If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at radiomd.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Coming up at 6:35, 35 minutes after the hour, we'll answer some email questions from you, our great listeners of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. If you have a question, comment for Dr. Mike, it's udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. We'll spend some time at 35 after the hour to answer some questions on things like osteoporosis. Is there a real and validated basis for nutrigenomics, vegan diets, those kind of things. If you have any questions along the way for Dr. Mike for this show, it's udocs@gmail.com, as I said, youdocs@gmail.com. What's toxic? What's not? Every week at this time, Dr. Gary Ginsberg, he's our in-house toxicologist. Dr. G, thanks for coming on. Dr. Mike, what do you like with Dr. Ginsberg's topics this week first?
Well, he's got a whole bunch of good ones. I want to hear about China and air pollution, but probably more interesting to me is how we're getting rid of the nuclear weapons in Syria. How are we doing that, Gary?
Hi, guys. Yeah, well, the collection of the chemical weapons in the has gone fairly well from the Assad regime, actually ahead of schedule, and there's something like 1,000 metric tons of nerve gas and mustard gas agents that need to be essentially detoxified, neutralized, or burned. And we don't want to dump it at sea. That was the bad old ways of doing it during the Cold War. As a matter of fact, people in Poland, from some dumping in the Baltic Sea, they got hurt from mustard gas washing up there. So and believe me, this is the political and economic, country after country has rejected the U.S. offer to have them host the removal, not the removal, but the neutralization or destruction of these weapons. So what they've come up with is a flotilla, a boat, a large military craft that they've leased that they're converting into a chemical neutralization factory, and they're going to do it out at sea. And they're claiming that they're not going to have any go overboard or into the water, and it's all going to be held in a vessel that will be still contain toxic chemical, because when you neutralize with strong acid or strong base and high temperature, when you neutralize these very toxic nerve poisons, you end up with something that still has some mild toxicity to it, and you certainly don't want to put it back into the ocean. So then they'll have to bring it to land and then find a hazardous waste disposal system where they can safely get rid of all that liquid.
Say, how about these people over there that work with in these
Gary,
countries? That
this seems like who would want to work on that boat?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be more. I think it's going to be contracted out to people who know how to handle hazardous waste with proper level 4 or
not just
5
robots
controls. Yeah, no, not just robots. No, they're going to have people controlling the vessels. Just in case there's a fail-safe accident, they'll have lots of safety precautions. But at least if something bad happens, it will be far from land.
I was going to ask you, these people who over there in these countries who work with this stuff in Syria, developing these weapons, what kind of health situation do these people have?
Well, it's a good question. We don't really know. You know, we're not actively in this country engaged in making chemical warfare weapons anymore. So, you know, that industry we don't have. I don't know what kind of precautions they took. Look, you can handle most anything safely if you properly screen, monitor, and have all the right safety equipment. So hopefully the Syrian people took care of that for their own researchers. But one thing that why this is such a hot potato is because it's a huge security risk. If some terrorist cell knew, for example, that all this is being trucked across some other country, you know, they might try to hijack it.
Okay, let's talk about China. Dr. Mike brought up the China story, air pollution and its relationship to the life expectancy in China. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, well, we've talked about how high the levels of particulate matter can get in Beijing. But the health implications have been more predicted, statistical, not actually measured. More and more studies now are starting to come out of China. Interestingly enough, they're letting some outside researchers in. And this study looked at people living north of, in the northern part of China, which uses a lot of coal, versus the southern part of China, which does not. And 5.5 years shorter life expectancy if you live in places like Beijing or even in some of the more rural outposts, but which are further, but which are still in the north where they burn coal. So coal is a very dirty source of energy, puts a lot of particulates into the atmosphere, and is leading to 5.5 years less lifespan. So the 500 million people that live in the north of China, that adds up to 2.5 billion life years lost.
Wow. Let's talk about cornflakes. Cornflakes. I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
Gary, I looked at the picture from Shanghai today, and there is, which is southern rather than northern, and there is a ton of air pollution there today. You can't even see.
I know. This is an unusual weather pattern, and it is really socked in right now over Shanghai, emergency situation there. So the whole country really is a bad air quality, poor environmental health zone. This study showed that the north is worse than the south, but anywhere in China is going to be worse than, say, living in Los Angeles or Mexico City, which are the two North American continent locations where we normally think of bad air quality, or sometimes bad air quality.
All right, next story, I guess, if I can ask you about it, is the cornflake story, Dr. Ginsberg.
Yeah, right. Well, General Mills is based out of Minneapolis. They've got a factory there, and I don't know why the production of cornflakes or yogurt or ice cream, which General Mills is well known for, would lead to the release of large amounts of trichloroethylene, a very toxic and carcinogenic solvent, into the groundwater. My theory is that they must have been cleaning, these releases go back 20, 30, 40 years, but they must have been cleaning some metal parts in their factories with this solvent, weren't careful about all the waste solvent, and it ended up getting into the ground. And so there have been lawsuits against General Mills. There's been a huge amount of cleanup that has gone on to try to save the city of Minneapolis's drinking water from all this TCE pollution. But there are certain quadrants where the levels in the ground, in the groundwater and in the soil in certain neighborhoods are so high that even if you're not drinking the water, you just by breathing the air in your home, enough of this toxic solvent is getting into the houses to create a health risk. And if they don't put in systems to vent the soil under these houses, these people can go on to generate both a reproductive risk and a long-term cancer risk. So we don't know why it got into the ground, but it's there. It's underneath people's homes. We're talking 50 to 100 homes right now, which are in the bad zone, but the testing is ongoing.
All right. Dr. Gary Ginsberg with us every week here on the show. If you'd like to check his website out, very informational, interesting, and entertaining. It's whatstoxic.com, whatstoxic.com. To reach Dr. Mike on the show today, 877-711-5211, or udocs@gmail.com. As a matter of fact, we'll answer some email questions from listeners and get you the answers that you're looking for right after the break. And again, catch us on iHeartRadio Talk as well. It's a unique way to customize your information, health information, news information, but just another way to get the information out about this great show every week. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Thank you for listening today, and stay well.